Good morning. Welcome, everybody, to the Atlanta Old-Timers meeting. My name is Rebecca Thomas, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 26th of 1988, and we're very grateful that everyone is here to join us today. If we could, let's take a moment of silent meditation followed by a serenity prayer. Serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
We're very grateful to have our speaker today. You know, when I got serious about recovery, I ended up in a step study and wonderful women, and I'm extremely, extremely grateful for that. But one of the ladies grew up in the Biscayne room and continued to talk about GDP and GDP this, GDP that. And I mean, it was GDP a lot. And so over the years, and at that time she'd moved away. And so, but she came back to town and through the Atlanta Roundup, probably the first time I heard your story. And over the years, I've heard her story. And it's grateful to me to have someone that's from this area back with us again, and as you hear her story, being from the Biscayne room and that kind of stuff, it's really cool. I don't know, it just makes the old-timers meeting just more special for someone from this area that grew up and knowing this tradition. So without any further ado, I give you GDP. I'm Judy Pearson. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Glad to be here today. My sobriety date is December the 18th, 1972. So, yeah. Those of you that went, oh, it surprises me too, if you want to know the truth. Because that's one of those I didn't know. I can tell you, I never thought I'd be an old timer. I can tell you that much. I didn't think that was going to happen when I got here. I didn't know what y'all were going to do to me. But I just know I didn't have any other place to go but Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to talk a little bit about what some things were like when I first got sober, because I think old-timers should. I think we should talk about it. Not all of it was good, by the way. I was sitting, when I was driving down here, I live in LJ. And when I was driving down here, I thought, well, let's see. I thought about one meeting I went to early on in sobriety. I probably wasn't a year sober. And at that meeting, women didn't talk. They didn't talk until I got there. They're talking now, I can tell you that much. But really, there was a group up in Hiawassee, and only the men spoke at that discussion meeting. They didn't even call on women. The first meeting I went to, and they skipped over me, and I thought, well, maybe they just didn't notice me. And the second meeting, they went to close the meeting, and they didn't call on me again, and I said, you wait just a damn minute. I'm an alcoholic, and I got something to say. And they never forgot me again. Now, I will tell you, though, that was the only meeting that I ever had that happen at. It's even kind of hard to believe now that that actually happened. So anyway, the story is what I was like and what happened and what I'm like today. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my drinking because I think I should. This is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. You know, and I'm glad that we're all sober. I praise God for that. But y'all got to know that I didn't get here by mistake. And hopefully, and the other thing too, right now it's 11:30. And I'm going to try and keep this brief because I know y'all we got a Falcons game coming up. You know, but please don't go and tell your group tonight, my God, that woman talked till 12:30. And he started at 11 and she was up there till 12:30. But I will try and get to the point. Anyhow, I came from an alcoholic home, which should come as no surprise to any of y'all. My stepfather was the alcoholic, and I came from one of those alcoholic homes a lot of us don't like to talk about, because it was one of those nasty, ugly, people getting beat up kind of alcoholic homes.
At 9 years old, I was sexually molested by my stepfather, and that went on until I was 16. And at 16, I had had enough and tried to kill him. And I was drunk, and I had him down on the floor. He's a pretty good-sized man, but you know, even if y'all small and even if you are small and wiry, which I was back then, if you're angry enough, it doesn't matter, does it? And I was angry enough, and I had him on the floor, and I had my hands around his throat. And the only thing that snapped me out of that was my mother and my kid sister pulling me off of him and saying, "My God, you're going to kill him. You're going to kill him. Get off of him. You're going to kill him." And that was my intent, people. I'll just be honest with you. That was my whole intent. And that stopped everything. And I told him if he ever laid a hand on me again, I'd kill him. And he knew I meant it. And it stopped right there. I was 16. But to tell you, you know, his alcoholic drinking and all those things that I saw as a kid growing up, and I thought, you know, I don't want to be that way, man. I don't want to grow up. I'm not going to drink like that. But here's the thing. I did drink like that. You know, I fell in love with alcohol my very first drink. It did for me what I needed done. And you're not going to hear me talk about drugs, and that's because alcohol worked, and that's the only reason why. I've never had to go to anything else. I will promise you, though, because I'm not sanctimonious, is that I know that if alcohol hadn't gotten it done for me, I'd have shot dope, I'd have snorted, sniffed, whatever I had to do, right, to get myself where I wanted to go. I just know alcohol got me there. And it wasn't that it made me happy. It wasn't that it made me sad. It just took me out. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to get out. I didn't want to be in this world. I didn't like this world, you know, and I just did not. It buffered everything for me. And I'd get in trouble, and I managed to make it through high school, but it kind of went downhill from there. You know, now, I've got 44 years in this program, so you have to know I got here young. I was 23 when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, and the thing that's so wonderful about that is that I came in and picked up one white chip, and that's it, man. That's it. And thank you for that. And I tell you, it's not... The only reason I bring this up, it seems like here lately I've been hearing people come in from different places getting detoxed and whatnot, and their counselors tell them, "You'll probably go out and drink again." Well, why don't you just write them an invitation and tell them where to go? You know, don't be telling a damn drunk he's going to drink again. You don't need to be telling them that. They're looking for an excuse, and now they got it bona fide from their counselor that it's a... Don't do that. Okay, because here's the thing that they don't tell them. You could go out and drink, and you might die. They never put that, and you might die after it. And that's the important part. You might not make it back here. All right, so if relapse is common, that is true. But don't bank that you're going to live through it. Because you may very well not. And those of us that have been around a long time know how many. As a matter of fact, most of us have lost count of how many didn't make it back. And it's sad. It's sad. Because they could have what Alcoholics Anonymous so readily gives you if you're willing to do it. You know? So, yeah, you can go out and drink again, but don't think that you're going to make it back. You could die. And we can't forget the severity of this disease. We can't forget it. So anyway, I got out of high school and I got a job and started working, and most of us fall upstairs, and so did I, right? I got promoted because I am a good worker when I'm sober. Problem was, less and less time was between the bad drunks, and it was pretty much every night by now. And I'm not even in my 20s yet, people. You know? But when you're underage, you know where to go if you want to buy liquor and buy it without any problem. And I knew I had several places around town. I worked at Lenox Square. There used to be a little drive-in liquor store there. You just pull right in. They never ask you for IDs at drive-ins. Never. Never. And I used to just stop there on the way back from work, and I'd buy my six-pack of PBR Talls. And I'd down those puppies before I got home. No. I often wondered about the poor people who lived on Peachtree Dunwoody Road, because I'd finish them and just throw them out the window, and there'd be... But I was feeling pretty good by the time I got home, so... And that started, but I wasn't able to stay at a job much. Stability was not one of my strong points in any area of my life, and so it was with working. And so I got into the bar and restaurant business so I could make some good money, and I did. I made good money in the bar and restaurant business. But that was no place for a bloomer, or maybe it was a good place for a blooming alcoholic to go. I don't know. It probably got me here at 23, I guess. But I just kept going downhill, and I had a lot of relationships because I was one of those women who used to get engaged a lot. And eventually those guys would always say to me, "You got to do something about your drinking," and I'd say, "No, I got to choose between you and drinking, you're gone." And those of you that are alcoholic, you have to know that, you know what, nothing's going to take that away from me, because that's the only thing that gives me purpose for living. That is the only thing that brings me any peace and calm. And serenity at all is a quart of liquor. And I wasn't fussy. I preferred vodka because you can't smell it. But I drank whatever you had or whatever I could steal or whatever I could buy on sale, whatever. It didn't matter to me. No, and I used to get in a lot of fights, which shouldn't surprise you either, right? Because I was beat on most of my life, so how else do you solve things when you disagree with people? You just slap them. Or hit them with your fist, or just depending on how drunk you are, you might kick them. I don't know, you know? And that's kind of the way that it was for me. And it just, everything seemed to be falling apart, and you know, we finally hit that stage where you try so hard to hold it together, and it's not going to do anymore. And then you just finally realize that this is the way it's going to be for you. And now I remember one of my fiancés told me, "Judy, you're never going to see 25. Somebody's going to kill you. Or you'll kill yourself." And he was about right. I just about did when I got here. And I got to the point where I couldn't even hold a job anymore. You know, and I was always getting in fights with somebody and waking up in the morning and I was just a mess. You know, the lip was cut, the eye was black. Sometimes I could go to work. Sometimes, you know, if the eye's black enough, man, there's no makeup that covers it up. There's none. You know, so you just stay home till it goes away. You know, and I was not, in case you hadn't picked up yet, I was not a dainty drinker. I didn't sit in my kitchen and drink. I went out to the bars and got in fights. Now, you all know this. I never intended that to be. That's not what I had planned. I was going to go out, have a few drinks, until it finally got to the point that I knew better. There was no few drinks left for me anymore. I picked up a drink, I was going to get drunk. I wasn't going to stay nice. I was always going to get in trouble. I always ended up offending somebody, walking off with somebody's husband. I always ended up doing something, you know, that upset people, whether I intended to or not. And the most important part is not so much what I did to others, although that's certainly important, but what I was doing to myself all that time. Because I cared less and less and less about me. I cared less about who I was, what I was doing with my life. None of it mattered. And I reached that point that the big book tells us, I just wish I could get out. I just wish I could check out. And I even tried that once. And I obviously failed at that. No. Because life just wasn't, we are at that jumping off point. I couldn't hold a job at a bar anymore, and I was running out of men. Because I always managed to, you know what, when you're young and you're slender and you look good and you got dark hair and you got an attitude, man, they'll bail you out of anything. Yeah, and they did. And I had a lot of guys that come to my rescue, and I use that. And don't kid yourself, ladies, we use what we got, because that's what we have to do. And that's what I had to do. All right, and so these guys would come and they'd bail me out and they'd pay me bills and get my electricity turned back on and all that good stuff that men will do for you when you're 23 and good looking. And then they were out of my life because they always came up with that line. You know, you got to quit drinking. I'm like, well, bye. And on to the next one. And another habit we all have is we always have the ace in the hole. You never break up with a man until you know you got one in your hip pocket, right? And so that's the way that went. And it finally got to where really people who knew me stayed away from me. Because I got to where I was dangerous. They never knew what I was going to do. It wasn't just a matter of me getting drunk and getting in a fight. It was a matter of me getting drunk and pulling a knife on you. I was getting crazy. I was getting absolutely crazy. And so I couldn't hold a job anymore. And so I went to do what a lot of women could do when they can't hold a job anymore. And I worked as a prostitute. I worked as a hooker in Atlanta. Because that's what I had to do. And that's my story. And I hope it's not your story, but if it was, then you know there's two of us in this program. Let me tell you, we do what we got to do to survive, and if it offends you, that's just too bad. Nothing I can do about it now. It's what happened. I don't know why people are so shocked about it. It's the oldest profession in the world. I don't know why y'all are shocked. But then, you know, I had to go. I knew I was losing it because of the violence thing. I mean, it was just totally out of hand. And so I checked myself into what used to be Georgia Mental Health Institute over there on Briarcliff Road. Any alumni here? And I was in there. They put me on a lock ward. And I love the way one speaker said it. If you don't know what a locked ward is, it's when the doorknob is not on your side of the door. Yeah, yeah. And I stayed there for 6 months, and I eventually ran a con on my shrink, and I got out of there. I had no business being on the streets. I just simply didn't. I mean, I was crazy. I was just absolutely crazy. And I went to stay. My mother finally kicked me out of the house for my behavior and said I wouldn't welcome at her home anymore. I couldn't stay with Mama anymore. And, of course, that's where a lot of us run to, isn't it, is we go over to Mama. And when Mama says, you can't come home anymore, that gets kind of scary. And my cousin was in Atlanta. She was doing some things for General Motors, and she told me I could come stay with her, and I wasn't with her very long. She told me I had to leave. And I didn't know where I was going to go. I'd been off on a drunk. I didn't have any money. I didn't know where anything was. You know how we are about our stuff. I had my stuff kind of scattered all over Atlanta. You know, I never left Atlanta. I just kind of traveled around the perimeter and lived. So I had a little bit out in Forest Park, and I had a little bit down in Buckhead, and all my stuff. So I didn't know what to do. And when Joanne said that I had to leave, I sat there a minute, and I thought, okay, I'll go. I don't need you. I don't need anybody else. And I went through all these people I had known and all these guys I had known and all these people that once upon a time I had worked with, and, you know, none of them would take me in. And they had reasons. And I could go through every one of them and say, yeah, well, this one I owe this one money, and this one I did this or that or the other in her family. Or it all came up a no, man. There was no place for me to go. There was nobody that would even let me into their home to crash just for a few days. Nobody. And I don't know why I decided Alcoholics Anonymous was the place for me to go. And I remember, and you all have to think about the sheer lunacy of what I'm about to tell you. I had been to some of the best shrinks and some of the worst shrinks in Atlanta, trying to get my head straightened out and figure what was wrong with me, right? And I'm in a nut house, and one of the other patients comes up to me and says, you know, you might want to try AA. Now, I went and spent all this money when some guy that's stoned on Thorazine had the answer. I mean, just think of how ludicrous that really is. It shouldn't be, right? But God works in mysteries, doesn't he, huh? I still remember that happy guy coming up and telling me, you know, that's what I needed to do. They put me on some stuff when I was in there, too. They put me on Milrow. I don't even think you get high on that stuff. I think you just go from coherent to stupid. Because I don't remember, I just don't remember doing much about more than just shuffling up and down in front of the nurse's station. And I eventually came off of that slowly, but I came off of that. But it did keep me from hitting people, I can tell you that much. And so that's the package I brought to y'all and said, fix it. That is what I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to my first meeting, and I'll never forget the guy that was there. His name was Buddy. He twice-stepped me, as a matter of fact. He had a young woman named Bunny. I'll never forget her either. I'd never seen anybody. She had to be Al-Anon, man, because everything was perfect, you know. The hair was perfect. Everything was perfect. And I'm sitting there with my cigarette hanging out of my mouth, and I can't hardly even think about brushing my hair. But I went to my first meeting. And my cousin went with me, and Buddy asked me as the meeting was winding down. He said, "Do you have any questions? Anything you want to know about us?" And I said, "No, I just don't want to drink anymore. I'm sick to death of being drunk." And you know, I really do. I look back at how I felt that night, and I felt like I had fought an 80-year war. There wasn't a part of me that just wasn't worn out. I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't think anymore. I couldn't work anymore. I had a hard time figuring out what to wear. I just nothing would go, you know, and I really just gave up. And I think that's one of the reasons, that is the biggest reason that I only have one white chip, is because I don't think I could do it again. And I'll tell you, you may hear sometimes in the program where, oh, they've been sober so long they don't remember what it's like to be drunk. I'm going to tell you, if they've been sober a long time, they remember what it's like to be drunk. That's why they're sober. You don't forget what that's like, man. You don't forget that feeling of uselessness. You don't forget that self-pity. You don't forget that self-hatred. You don't forget getting sick every morning. I'll never forget, my cousin came by one morning and I was taking my third shot of vodka hoping it would stay down. And she said, "I don't know why you do this to yourself. You know what's going to happen. I don't know why you keep doing this to yourself." And I remember turning to her and saying, "Joe, I ain't got a choice. You don't get it. I don't have a choice." And I didn't. I didn't have a choice. So I picked up my white chip. And I'm sober a while, and I'm rocking along, and they told me 90 meetings in 90 days. I thought it was a rule. I thought you had to do it, or throw you out. So I went 90 meetings in 90 days, and I kept going. I was 3 years sober before I quit going to a meeting every night. I didn't know you could do any better until my sponsor said, "You know, you can take a night off now." And a lot of it was fear, too, man. A lot of it was fear. I didn't want to get away from y'all. I always felt safe in an AA room. I always felt safe in an AA meeting. You know, I knew there wasn't anybody there that was going to beat me up, or at least I didn't think so. And you know, I knew there wasn't any liquor there, and I knew there were people there that understood me. And if I was in one of those moods where I didn't want to talk, they left me alone. I knew that. You know, and I was 10 days sober, 11 days sober, when I went to the Atlanta Biscayne room, and there were two guys there, two men. One was a big, huge man, and his name was Jim, and everybody called him Big Jim, because that's how we differentiated people then. You know, we had Bob the Hat, Big Jim, Jocko. Nobody really had a real name, you know. Just kind of had a tag you laid on them, and that's who they were. And Big Jim and another one named Dad, we all called him Dad, because he was a dad to a lot of us. And they took me under their wing, and they taught me Alcoholics Anonymous. And they taught me Alcoholics Anonymous, not by thumping the big book all the time, but they taught me that by the way they walked. I could see how they acted towards other people. I could see how they acted when we went out to eat somewhere, and I could see how they treated the waitress with courtesy and respect. You know, I could see how they talked to their wives with courtesy and love and respect. I could see that. I saw that with my own eyes. They didn't have to thump a book. I could see sobriety walking in front of me with those men. I knew what it was like to get out of yourself because I saw it. Because I saw it. I saw what you all did. You know, I couldn't read the big book. Honest to God, the first 5 years of my sobriety, I had a hard time with the big book. They got big words in there, and it's a big book, right? Yeah. And I just had a hard time with it. As Bill sees, it was a good book for me because it had an index. You could look up what was wrong with you and go to the page, and it would tell you. And I loved that book. And then later on, it was the 12 and 12, and the 12 and 12 is still one of my favorites. I absolutely love it. Well, now, you know, with my background, I'm not just going to come into Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober, right, and straighten out my life. I'm too screwed up for that, right? So what I needed to do, and I knew this would work, is get a husband. And I was 3 months sober, and guys are real easy to find in AA.
I didn't have any trouble at all. And at 3 months I got married. And he had four months, so. And my home group reacted just about like y'all did. And so it goes, people. You know, we do those things. And let me tell you, you're going to make mistakes. If you're brand new to this program, you're going to make mistakes early. You're going to make mistakes all the time. I'm not at the point yet where I can say I never make mistakes anymore. No, it doesn't happen. But in new, it's just bad news. And I had a hard time working in with people, you know, like at work and that kind of thing, because I didn't know how to do this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, I had to wear clothes that actually fit. You know, and cut back on the makeup, because back when I was what I was, I looked like what I was, right? Well, you don't go into an office looking like that. See? So I had to learn all the basics, and my home group taught me those things, those basics that you learn, you know. And I started working with a temporary agency because I just thought that would be best, and it was. It worked out really good for me because I'd go on an assignment, and I'd be there a month or so, and then I'd start hating people that worked there. And they'd move me, and I could move and go somewhere else, and I had another assignment. And so I was able to keep work, and I worked for that temporary agency for over 2 years. And rarely was I ever on a job more than a month. And if you're new and you're crazy, it's a good place to go. And I'll never forget the first paycheck I got, because I'd been a waitress and then a hooker, and so, you know, I didn't have any taxes deducted, so. I mean, it was neat to look at that check, and look, there's FICA and Social Security, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I don't know, I was working for one of those temporary agencies, one of these companies in the temporary agency had sent me to, and they put me in accounting. I was an accounts receivable clerk back when we used to have those. And I found I had a real liking for numbers, you know, and did pretty well with that. And I liked that company, and they seemed to like me. And so I stayed. And I went back and got some more accounting education. And long and short of that story is 8 years later, I was the Southeastern Regional Manager for that very same company. Now, I'd like to tell you that's because I'm so brilliant, but it wasn't. It was because of Alcoholics Anonymous. People in this program taught me what to do and what not to do. And unlike a lot of things that I had done in my life, I listened. I listened to what they said. It was a wonderful job. I had a lot of responsibility, enjoyed every minute of it. The whole industry collapsed, so that was gone. But it didn't matter, because I had done something I never thought I could do. I had started to fit back into society. I fit back into society. I had become responsible. Now, and these are things that Alcoholics Anonymous teaches us. I got to the point where my bills were paid on time. It just blows my mind, you know, that I actually could sit down and work out a budget and say, this is what I have to pay. And in case you're brand new at this stuff, rent comes first, not last. Rent comes first. And the first marriage didn't work out. We lasted 2 years, and we parted. And I'm not going to say anything bad about my ex-husband. I knew what I was getting into. The marriage just never should have been. He was a good boy. He liked fun. He liked having a good time. Unfortunately, he liked it a whole lot more than working and being responsible. And that was okay, because it worked for him. I mean, he was drawing a check anyway. He was disabled. So that was cool, but it wasn't working for me. And that, along with him using again, and we parted ways. And that was okay, because one of the habits I didn't break was having one in my hip pocket. And there was another guy that I had, and truthfully, honestly, not to smudge that relationship, because that relationship was probably the purest relationship I ever had in my life. We truly liked one another as people. As individuals, we truly liked each other. And a year later, I married Craig Pierce.
And it was a year and 2 months, actually. Of course, we moved in right away because you know how we are. Alcoholics don't date. I mean, it's just, we don't date. You move in. If I can stand you at home, then we'll go out. But we, you know, we had fun, and there were so many of the things that we liked that we enjoyed together. My husband played pro football at one time in his life, and football was always had been one of my favorite sports. And we had those Sundays where just he and I would sit and watch games and just have a ball and criticize each other because I called it right and he called it wrong, and the referee called something altogether different, you know. So. But it was a wonderful relationship. We both loved nature and spent a lot of time outside. You know, we liked good books. There were just a lot of things in common. And in my home, we laughed a lot. We laughed a lot. We were very involved, stayed very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was also a member of this fellowship. Not as fortunate as I at staying sober the whole time. He went back out and drank a couple of times. I can attest to you, and will joyfully attest to you, I'm a lousy Al-Anon man. I don't do Al-Anon. I do. I'm going to kill you just as soon as you sober up. That's what I do. It makes me mad just thinking about it. Yeah, but so it goes, and we did those things that we saw other people doing. We went out and we bought a house, and we both had a responsible position in jobs, you know, and we were a part of a community, and we voted, and we took part in our community, and we became part of society, and neither one of us had the story that says, you're going to live in a suburb. You know, and you're going to pay taxes, and you're going to go to work every day. That's not where we came from. And now Craig was a wino up in Pittsburgh, for God's sake. And actually, he had left Pittsburgh on his way to California and ended up in Georgia. So what does that tell you? Right? And so it is. Yeah. And life was good. Craig had some real physical issues, some real physical problems, which were to be the end for him eventually. But we were together 25 years. For two alcoholics, and I was wife number four, okay? So there wasn't a whole lot that, I mean, people weren't taking book on us, I can tell you that much. And there were a lot of people who didn't think it would last. He was a good bit older than I was, but that's all right. And 25 years we were together, and then he passed. And I miss him every day. He's been gone 17 years now. He passed in 2000. And I still think about him. Not a day goes by that I don't think about him. Because he was my soulmate. Now, I could sit around and cry about it, and sometimes I do. It's okay. It's part of mourning, and there's not an end to some of the mourning. You know what I'm saying? Some of it you're just going to cry, and that's okay. You cry, you get it over with, and you go on. No, but never a day goes by that I don't miss him. All right. We moved up to Ohio, and that's where I lost him, was up there. He passed away up there. That was a mistake. But we moved up there because his mother's health was failing. And he felt like we'd been down here with my people all the time. And I felt the same way. It was only just and right that we go up and spend some time with his family, especially as his mother was approaching the end of her life. And so we went up there. But I'm not an Ohio gal. There was nothing about Ohio that I liked. I was not real happy with. Well, I hated the weather. People aren't the same in Ohio, and if you're from Ohio, I mean, no offense to you. I'm just saying this is where it was for our life. Yeah. And I mean that, honey. If I don't mean to offend you. It's just the way it was for me. The snow was always there, it seemed like to me. They said it only... It just seemed to me like it was. And I missed Atlanta. I missed my home group. I missed the people here. You know, and I missed the fact they didn't have a Waffle House up there. because nothing will do it like a pecan waffle, you know? So I came back in 2001 after Craig passed. I waited a year because y'all told me to. Don't do anything within a year of anything big happening in your life. And so I did. I waited a year. And I went through the whole thing of selling the house and buying a house down here. I couldn't afford Atlanta. So I moved up. I bought a place up in LJ, and I got a house on a dirt road on 2 acres. And it's just a little house, fine for me and the dog. And it's beautiful up there. And, you know, here's the strange thing about it. I didn't plan it. Obviously, I didn't plan all this to happen. But I remember Craig and I were talking one time, and I said, you know, I want to retire in the mountains. I don't want to live in this city. I want to live in the mountains. And he loved it up there, too. And we had decided. You know, so despite all the changes and plans and all the shifts and all the things that we didn't plan, I ended up with my home in the mountains. And I plan on staying there until I can't keep it up anymore. I painted my front porch this year, and that's probably the last time I'm going to paint that damn thing. But I love it, and I have good neighbors, wonderful AA group up there. In the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and in life, you're going to go through those experiences that'll throw you. And since I'm a fighter, and there may be a few fighters in here, every now and again, God will send you one, like one of those punches you used to get right between the rib cages where it just takes your breath away. And you go to your knees, which is a good place to be. All right. And so it was when Craig died. It was that blow between the rib cages that took my breath away, and I didn't think I'd ever take a deep breath again. No. But let me tell you, there is still joy in life. There is still joy in life because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I absolutely believe that. Not too many years ago, I lost my sister. And the reason why this meeting is important to me is the sister that passed away didn't speak to me hardly at all for 20 years in sobriety. And I kept praying, God, let me just have my sister back. Let me just have my sister back. You know, whatever I need to do. And I made my amends, and it didn't make any difference. She still just didn't want to be a sister to me. And that was cool, because I was not a nice person, people, and I didn't hang with nice people. I just didn't, you know, when I was out there drinking. So she had her reasons, and I had to allow her to have those reasons. But shortly after Craig passed away, she decided that she and I were going to hang out together. And she came up there and supported me during his funeral. And the first meeting my sister ever went to that I was speaking at was at this meeting. And so this is really special to me because I lost my sister 5 years later. And she had a brain tumor, and she recovered okay from the actual surgery, but the infection got in, and that's the end of that story. She was 58 years old, and I miss her every day. Because we had gotten to where we were when we were kids. You know, where you sit and you talk for hours about absolutely nothing that means nothing to anybody else but the two of you. No. Just, it's that kind of a friendship that you have with people in your family, that closeness that you have that you can't replace with anything else. And so we sat up just like we used to and talked till 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. Used to be one or two, but we were both getting older, you know. And so we talked, and she got to come here and hear my story. You know? But again, there's still joy in life. Mama left us not too long ago, a couple years ago. She was 85. She was in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. And that's tough, and you always miss your mama. I do. You know, because when I got back to Alcoholics Anonymous and I got active in this program and I started living what I'm supposed to live in Alcoholics Anonymous, my mother and I took her shopping one day, and we were out driving. Car was quiet, and she reached over and patted me on the shoulder, and she said, "You're a good daughter, Judy. You're a good person, and Mama loves you very much." And that's Alcoholics Anonymous, because she had no use for me. You know, but it's through work in this program that those kind of things happen, and there's still joy in life. Now, now I'm a little white-haired lady. I like to call it sexy silver, but y'all know. There you go, baby. That's it. You know, and my life is full. It is absolutely full, and it's full because this is what y'all taught me. You know, you taught me, and it tells us in the book, We've got the opportunity to take advantage of life. I should be dead. I can't speak for y'all, but I know I wouldn't have made it till 25. I think he was right. I wouldn't have made it till 25. You know, but I stay busy. I got my little house, and I've got a nice big perennial garden in the front. And although perennials aren't as much work as other flowers, they're still work. Don't let them kid you. They're still work. And I get out there, and I work. I'm active in my community. I volunteer at a thrift store, and I clean up filthy stuff to go back out on the shelf and help the poor. And that money goes to abused women and children. No, there is some semblance there for me. It matters. It matters. I want to do something that's going to help my community. And it doesn't always have to be, even as our book tells us, an Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? We're supposed to reach out our hand to anyone who needs help. Anyone. And kids who get beat and women who get beat need help. So if I have to polish something that is covered in cigarette smoke and God knows what else has crawled over it, I'll do that if that's what it takes. And I enjoy it. I work with a bunch of other sexy silver women, and we just have a ball, you know. And we're giving to others, and that's how I do it for my community. And I still give it back to Alcoholics Anonymous, because until my last breath, people, I'm going to owe Alcoholics Anonymous. There's just no two way about it. I don't understand what happens to us where we reach a certain point in sobriety and think we don't have to come to AA meetings anymore. That we don't have to tell people this thing works for the long haul, man. You know, where do we get off getting all the good stuff and then walking away? I mean, personally, and I'm only speaking for myself here, I think that's a height of selfishness and self-centeredness. You got your act together, so to hell with the rest of us. What's the matter with you? You know, you keep coming back. Do I go to as many meetings as I used to? No. But I go to as many as I want. You know, and I go a lot of times because I know somebody's going to be there and I want to see what they're up to. It's like I heard another speaker say, we don't gossip, we're just concerned. That's lovely. If you're sitting out there and you got somewhere between 3 and 5 years of sobriety and you're thinking about killing yourself, you're okay, baby. You are all right. You are all right. Don't think you're not doing AA right. You're doing AA fine. Okay, and I bring this up because a lot of people, I know I went through it, man. I did. I mean, I couldn't see things getting any better. It just seemed like I had hit the pits, you know, and nothing was getting any better. My attitude wasn't getting any better. And I went to my sponsor, and Maggie Harrison, God rest her and God bless her, was my sponsor then. And I told her, I said, you know, it's just like the thrill is gone, man. It's not there anymore. You know, and she said, well, go back and read your book. Get back into your book and do it like you did in the first time. You know, read it a paragraph at a time and digest that paragraph and then move on. Don't be in any hurry. You know, and it always amazes me how things that are so simple work for such complicated people. Isn't it something? And that's what I did. And I'm going to tell you, because Maggie's been on my heart here lately, and I don't know why. You know, you're not going to find many like Maggie and Big Jim and Dad and all of those that were so devoted and gave so much to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I know that because of them, I'm here today. I know that because of them, that even when I don't feel like doing these kind of things, I do it because that's what I'm supposed to do. Because I was taught well in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 11 days sober, and the 12-step call hit at the Biscayne Room. I said, well, I can't go. I'm only 11 days sober. Why the hell can't you go, she said. I said, because I'm only 11 days sober. Good time to me. Sounds like a good time for you to go on a 12-step call. And she pulled me aside and said, look, you're brand new. That new one's going to hold on to 11 days better than my 11 years. And she was right. And we went on a lot of them then. And it still is the best thing. Listen to another alcoholic. And I know we're all busy now. And I know a lot of us don't even talk on the phone anymore. We text. Or we email. No. But talking to another alcoholic is a blessing. You know, there's nothing that when you're looking somebody in the eye and saying, you're going to stay sober. You will stay sober. You know, there's that feeling, there's that something that comes that joins us, and that something is God. Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't have the track record by most folks to be attached to God so much. No, I just don't have a big God history. I just don't. But I can guarantee you, I never leave my house with that. He doesn't go with me. And I don't care where it is. When I had to sign that paper that took all life support off my husband, he was the one that signed that paper. I just held the pen. Now, that's it. And there is that time, there's that beautiful time where you'll know you've got that connection with him. And for me, I was early on in the program, not quite a year. And I had gotten in a fight with my ex-husband. And I remember I was sitting next to a lake and overlooking a mountain, a beautiful mountain up in Hiawassee. And I told God, I said, you know, I don't know if you're up there and I don't know if you can hear me, man, but I got to have some relief or I'm going to drink again. And I don't want to drink again. And it was like everything stopped. Everything in the whole world stopped. And everything became peaceful. I couldn't even hear the breeze blow anymore. And I knew he heard me. Because I felt the friendship of God. I felt as though he put his arm around me and said, you're going to be okay, kid. This is rough, but you're going to be okay. And I knew I didn't have to drink. And it got me through that day. And you know, when you have those days where you think you might want to end it all, just put it off. We're good at that. Okay? We are good at that. Put that off and know that tomorrow's another day. Because you can miss out on a whole lot. Don't quit 5 seconds for a miracle, man. Don't do it. Now, there's been a lot of stuff that I've suffered through that is outside stuff. You know, where I lost a job, bankruptcy, getting fired. That's happened more than once. I don't know what the heck. Because it usually, you know, I'm with a company 2 or 3 years and then they'll fire me. I was with one 12 years one time and they fired me. And I don't know what to do. I really wish I could figure it out. And the last time it happened, and I got fired, and I thought, you know, what am I going to do now? I'm not a young woman anymore. And then I thought, you're right, you're not. Why don't you retire? I said, that sounds good. So that's what I did. I retired. I hadn't done a thing since. Love every second of it. Now, thank heavens, though, I did have some reasonableness about it and did put some money aside. And I've got a decent place to live and a decent Social Security check and a little bit coming in. And so I'm all right. I'm all right. And the program gave me all that. All the love and the caring. And there are days, sometimes when you get older, you know, and you're home all day and you think you're going to be alone and people are going to forget you. They don't. Not in this program, they don't. The phone will ring and I'll hear from somebody I hadn't heard from. I have a guy that calls me about once a year. You know, just to check in, let me know he's doing okay. I never hear about from him after that. And then a year later, he'll give me a call. Usually it's around Christmas, so it's about time. You know, I stay active in the program, and so I've got other people now that I sponsor. And then, of course, I've got the girls I've been sponsoring for a lot of years. A few of them are here today. You know, I can't believe y'all still show up for this stuff. They don't need me much anymore because, you know, you chalk up some time in this program. Pretty soon your sponsoree's got 30 years. You look at them, when did you get so old? I had a neighbor come over yesterday. He said, Judy, your roof needs cleaning. I got a tin roof. I said, I know it, but I can't afford it, and I can't get up there and do it. He said, I know. So he did it. He just stood out there and cleaned off my roof for me. I have no idea why, but I sure am grateful to him. And I am a member of my community today. I participate in my community today. I belong to a certain political party, and we aren't going to go there. But I belong to that party, and I've done things for that party. And I like being a part of. Because, see, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous promises us, is that we don't have to hide anymore, that we can step out on faith and that we can become part of our community. You know, sobriety is not easy, people. Don't let people tell you it is. You know, I hear some of these folks come in, and honest to God, I don't know why they even show up at a meeting. They're so happy. is all. I'm serious, you know, and there never is a problem in their life, ever. They never have anything going wrong, you know. And I mean, it's been that way for me ever since I first got sober. You know, I first got sober, I'd see people come in with my length of sobriety, six months, and they have all this fantastic job, and their family's back, and they got an 8-bedroom house, and, you know, brand new car, and it's already paid for, and I'm sitting there, I got 9 cars, one of them runs, you know. You know. But the truth of the matter is, for me, and this is only my story I'm sharing here, is that there are days where it's tough. And it's not just tough. I'm not talking about fighting a drink. It's just one of those days, man, where gratitude is really hard to find. You know, and I just don't much care. And you know what that is? That's being a human being. You know, I am not one of those folks that can be on top of the world all the time. And I'm really kind of glad, because when I'm there, I ride that sucker, man. That is a good day, and I love every day of it. I love every minute of that day. You know, but for me, just to be pretty much on an even keel is what I like. You know, when I got here, it was up, down, up, down, up, down for probably 3 or 4 years. I never had anything that just kind of rocked along easy. You could never call me mellow, because I wasn't. You know? But now I see that happen a lot. Not only does that happen because of Alcoholics Anonymous, y'all taught me how, but it happens because I'm 68 years old. You know, that's part of maturing, is learning that not everything is a big deal. Not everything is a crisis. Not everything calls for immediate action. You know? Sometimes it's just life. So if I have anything to give, be more gentle on yourself. But continue, too, to stay in the arms of this program. Stay in the loving arms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Stay in the loving arms of our Father, the God who watches over us all. I wish you well, my friends. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Now, I know it's been a very long time since you've had a brown bag. On behalf of the committee, we want to present you a gift in a brown bag. All right. We want to thank you again for everyone being here, and congratulations on that person that got the big book, and all of you that are still here with us today, and we appreciate that. And remember, this time next year, we look forward to seeing you again. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. Reminds us that we're to place principles before personalities, that we're actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And before I forget, I want to thank our interpreters over here, Joy Marie and Martha. We thank them for their service that they do for us. It's very great. And if we can just stand where you are, grab a hand, and we'll end this with the Lord's Prayer. Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you, honey. Thank you very much. Don't be sweetheart.
I'm gone. away. I ain't never going back. Only thing I own in a paper sack. I'm all alone, and I'm lonesome day and night. I need someone's hand carry me when I'm tired. I got to go. I can't stay here no more. That mean old bartender just showed me the door. Somewhere, somehow, I'll win my fight someday, and we'll all be together on that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad.